You're listening to Insight here on Cap Radio. I'm your host, Chris Nichols. Earlier this year, we talked about a new series focused on exploring the diverse wildlife that calls the Sacramento region home, and to do so in a fun way. Cap Radio environment reporter Manola Sakaida introduced us to Rewilding Sacramento in her first two pieces looking at bald eagles, salmon, and water bugs. And over the following months, Manola's been busy out in the field digging into even more interesting animals, including ones that crawl, slither, and fly, as well as some of the challenges these animals are currently facing. She joins us now with a recap of those stories. Welcome back, Manola.
Happy to be here.
Okay, so can you give us a recap on the series? What got you thinking about Sacramento's local wildlife in the first place?
Yeah, so I started the series at the beginning of the year, and it was partially because I've always gotten pretty positive feedback when I've done stories about wildlife. People love animal stories, and I kind of wanted to lean into that. But also, for the bigger context for me, I'm just generally interested in working on pieces that connect people to the place that they live in, the environment that they live in. You know, I get to know their neighbors sort of thing, but instead of the people that live next door, you know, it's the animals that might be in your backyard or that you might spot on a hike. And some of the animals I've covered are animals that you might see around pretty easily, and some of them are a little bit harder to find. So yeah, it's a pretty diverse set.
And just from your experience creating this series so far, how diverse is the region that we call home? What's the benefit to residents to know about the wildlife around here?
Yeah, there's so many types of wildlife that we have out here. And I guess I should specify that for this series, I'm looking specifically at local native wildlife. So animals that people might see in our region, but specifically that are native to our region. And when it comes to the importance of that, I think that learning about local native wildlife here is a really good way to become familiar with our environment, what's going on with it, you know, how we can connect to it. And throughout these stories, I've been hitting on these really consistent themes about, you know, here's this animal with some interesting information about it, but also how is it doing? You know, are there threats to this animal's population and what does that look like? Because unfortunately, many of the animals I focused on in the series are facing some sort of challenge. So as I move on, you know, I ask whoever I'm interviewing, you know, what can people do about it? And also, where might they see the animal? So all of that is my hope that people can not just learn about an animal, but also learn how they're connected to that animal, how our fates are overlapping, you know, because what happens to the environment affects us and also affects these creatures. It might help people to see animals that they might see every day a little bit differently.
Well, like you said, they are our neighbors. Mm-hmm. They're all around us. So how many pieces have you done so far, and where is this series now?
I've done 7 so far, and the most recent one, which just published online yesterday, is about the Western Pond Turtle. And I went to Davis for that one and hung out with Brian Todd, who's a conservation biologist, and he was doing population surveys of the turtle around Poudre Creek.
Okay, so you have to tell us why you chose the Western Pond Turtle and what kind of threats they're facing.
Yeah, I mean, everyone loves turtles. But also, I guess a little fact is that they're the only native freshwater turtle in California. And unfortunately, they are dealing with quite a few issues to their populations, like, for example, development that leads to habitat loss. And sometimes, you know, they'll have to move from one area to another to lay eggs. Sometimes because of the way that we've developed this land, that means crossing a road that wasn't historically there, of course, and also that they're not really prepared to face, and that puts them in danger. And then there was one piece that Brian and I really focused on that I think is a little easier, hopefully, for people to address. What he talked to me about was the turtle called the red-eared slider that's not native here. They're a really common pet turtle that he's been seeing more and more in the places that he surveys. And what happens is that people get a red-eared slider as a pet, and for whatever reason, maybe it's more of a commitment than they realize because those turtles can live for a really long time, or maybe they're moving or something else. For whatever reason, the owner releases them into the wild, and that has some pretty big impacts.
The problem then is that those non-native turtles start to create their own populations in the wild, and that causes challenges for our native wildlife. I think one of the reasons non-native turtles like red-eared sliders do so well when they're released into the wild is that they tend to be much more defensive. If you get your hands on one or if a predator is trying to eat it, they will bite back. And so when a non-native turtle is interacting with a native turtle, the non-native turtle probably has an edge. It probably has a leg up in terms of being able to bite at the native turtle and scare the native turtle away, because our Western pond turtles are really shy. They're really retiring. They like to kind of hide and not be noticed.
Yeah, so you told me all of those reasons are why the red-eared slider is probably having an easier time making its way into all kinds of habitats. They're also just really used to being around humans already by the nature of being good for pets. And Western pond turtles aren't like that. Like you said, they like to keep to themselves and keep to areas where people aren't present, which can be limiting for them. And as always, I like to get some advice from researchers on what people can do to help the animals that if their population is struggling, and this one was easy. You know, he just told me, don't release those turtles into the wild. Find another place for them, maybe trying to rehome them or give them to groups that do turtle rescue, or an organization like one that he mentioned to me called the Northern California Herpetological Society. And yeah, I think his advice is a really good example as, you know, how humans can have this cumulative impact on the environment around them, even in ways that they might think are small. You know, you might think releasing one turtle is not a big deal, but if enough people are doing it, this happens.
Well, like you said, I think everybody does love turtles, mm-hmm. and I can totally understand why you focused on them. But another one of your spotlights shed light on another native population here in Sacramento, bees. So what did you learn about them, and who did you talk with?
Yeah, there's actually so many different kinds of bees, many, many more than I realized, and definitely more than just the honeybees that we all, you know, typically know about and love if you're into that, honey. but yeah, so I was kind of focused on bees overall. And there you can also see that connection of how we feed into their health and survival and how they feed us back by pollinating and pollinating crops that we need for food. So for that one, I talked to Angela Laws with the Xerces Society for Invertebrate Conservation. She's one of the caretakers of the Grassland Garden in South Natomas here in Sacramento. It's a garden that's specifically made to attract pollinators and support them, like bees. And she told me that like one impact to these populations is pesticides, and how pesticides can really harm native bees, and how that's connected back to their importance in making the food we eat by pollinating them. So yeah, like I said, we're linked, our survival is linked in that way. And she also told me that in areas where you have many species of bees, not just honeybees, you get better crop production and pollination than if you just have the honeybees. So the more biodiversity we protect, that helps us make sure pollination is still happening in a way that we can rely on for our food sources into the future. And she told me there's some easy ways to help them out.
The best thing you can do is plant flowers. If you have, all you have is a balcony, that's great. If you have some space in a yard, plant some flowers. And don't spray pesticides around your home. So those two things can help support bees.
And you can also volunteer in gardens like the one that she works at. So if you want to go to that one, she and other volunteers are also out there at that garden the third Saturday of the month from 9 to 11, and also Thursday evenings. They have more information on their website, and you can just show up, and they have all the tools for you. So that's also another way you can get involved.
So that's the Grasslands Garden in South Natomas.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Okay, so every animal and species, of course, is different. Some might be right in front of us. Do you have an example of one that might be easy for the everyday nature enthusiast to spot?
Yeah, that is an easy one to answer because it's one that I saw plenty of times before I did this piece. But yeah, one of my pieces from earlier in the year focused on the yellow-billed magpie. It's a species of magpie that can be identified because it has this yellow beak, which other kinds of magpies don't have. And it's one of those native animals that, yeah, if you lived here for a while, you've probably seen it, even if you don't know it. And it's something that is kind of found throughout the year here. So what's cool about this bird in particular is that it's endemic to California, which just means that it's exclusively found here, nowhere else in the world. And it's not even found really all over the state. It's actually mostly in parts of Northern and Central California. And Sacramento just happens to be one of the hubs for it too. So because of all of that, it's a bird that's actually attracted birders from out of the state and even out of the country to come find it here. Yeah, so for this piece, I ended up talking to a member of the local Audubon Society, Dan Arola. He's a retired wildlife biologist who studied the bird for a while, and he also does his own population surveys throughout Sacramento County. part of that work is monitoring how the bird has been doing after being impacted by the West Nile virus, is what he told me.
My study just sort of began as a field project to go learn what I could learn. And as I learned about the population and I began looking year to year to year, I realized, well, I can start tracking what changes are occurring in the population. Is it continuing to decline? Is it staying stable, or is it increasing?
And for the yellow-billed magpies that live in this area, yeah, what did you find?
Well, what I found is that since 2020, the population that occupies the Sacramento metropolitan area has increased by an average of 6% per year over that six-year period. So we're up about 30% in terms of numbers. So the magpie is coming back slowly, more slowly than others, but at least in the urban area where I've been studying, the population is coming back.
So, yeah, luckily you can still find them all over Sacramento. They're also found year-round here. So if you're curious about them now, you can still probably find them around here. And when I met up with Dan back in March for that piece, we went to Discovery Park and saw quite a few nests.
So, Manola, you have been out in the fields looking at a lot of animals. I want to move to one more. What about an animal you've covered that's harder to find?
Yeah, that would definitely be the ringtail. They're sometimes referred to as ringtail cats, but they're actually members of the raccoon family. And they kind of look like a mix between, I think people typically say, like a lemur and a raccoon, because they have this stripy tail, but they're also kind of long and they like to climb around trees mostly. Yeah, those are definitely harder to find than the other animals.
And what is it about them that makes them so hard to find?
Well, I guess one, not everyone knows they exist. I didn't even know what a ringtail was until I heard about Kristen Schulte and her research on this animal. She's a biologist with Sacramento City College who runs the California Ringtail Project. It's a project that's looking to better understand the ringtail population throughout the state. And she told me she's only seen ringtails that have been captured temporarily as part of her research.
I have never seen a ringtail in the wild, and I've been doing this almost 10 years. From the preliminary research on my study, where they seem to be thriving is in areas of low human density. So that already people aren't seeing them, you know, if most people live in San Jose, San Francisco, LA, you're not seeing them there. We're not seeing them in Sacramento. So they are living where people are more spread out. They are nocturnal. They don't travel like coyotes do and just traverse, or, you know, pumas or foxes, where they can traverse long distances. They need to remain undercover. They need to remain typically off ground. This is different for in the desert. They have a different behavior, but in these, you know, this oak woodland or coniferous forest, that's what they need. And so they are very secretive, very elusive. Most of the time when people have told me that they've seen one in the wild, it's either because it's come into like a cabin to get food of some kind, or it's ran very quickly across a road.
Since that piece aired, I've actually heard from quite a few, or at least a couple people told me they've actually seen ringtails in different places around our region. So it's not completely impossible. But the people who have told me that usually live in really forested areas, kind of like what Kristen was saying. And, you know, they've spotted them maybe when they're out camping at night, or if they live in the woods, they just happen to be walking around at the right time. But even though they're not easy to find, and, you know, many people might not have actually ever seen one in real life, they're really cute, which makes them easy to obsess over anyway, unlike some of the other animals I've covered in the series, actually. And Kristen told me that's actually one of the reasons why she loves them. She finds it important to spread the word about them, also because their population is facing some challenges from things like habitat loss due to development. So yeah, if you happen to see any ringtails, you can report them to Kristen's website. It's linked on my story. And the project, again, is called the California Ringtail Project.
You're listening to Insight here on CAP Radio. If you're just joining us, we're talking with CAP Radio environmental reporter Manola Sakaida about her ongoing series, Rewilding Sacramento, Shedding Light on Native Wildlife. Manola, we just talked about ringtails, and it's, of course, it's easy to get people to care about animals as cute as ringtails, mm-hmm. but have you run into any that need a little help? They maybe aren't quite as easy of a sell.
Yes. So I did a piece on the giant garter snake. It's a native snake to our region that only lives in freshwater marshes. And unfortunately, yeah, not everyone loves snakes. But I still think they're important to learn more about because, as some might know, marshes and wetlands are among the most threatened kinds of habitats in California. We've already lost 90% of the wetlands that were historically here. And that's because of development. You can, you know, people filling in a wetland so they can build on it. Agriculture also plays a part because sometimes people are draining wetland areas for agriculture, or maybe they're creating dams and other structures that impact the ability of water to get to those areas that, you know, naturally it would get there. So because of all that, the species is listed as threatened, and it's really been impacted by those changes. But again, yeah, because it's a snake, people don't always want to hear about it. So for this story, I ended up talking to Michael Starkey. He's the founder of a local conservation nonprofit called Save the Snakes. And a big part of his work, he told me, is just educating people and trying to reduce the fear that people might have around them. So, for example, he told me that in Northern California, one thing that might be helpful for people that are a little bit fearful to know is that the only venomous snakes here are rattlesnakes. So, and those are pretty easy to identify for obvious reasons. So if that's any reassurance, if you see a snake and you're not familiar with it and it's in our region, you really don't have to worry about, you know, a venomous bite. Michael told me that approach is really key for his work.
I feel fortunate that I have a little bit of an understanding of snakes, and therefore I see them in a different way. And so it's really interesting when I have people who, you know, they go on a hike with me or they come to our snake conservation center to learn about snakes. They may be hesitant, but when they see myself or our volunteers share their passion about them and they talk about the different behaviors, they help people who are hesitant or afraid of snakes to see them in a different way. And so when people understand snakes a little bit more, it just completely takes away the fear factor, because they're less unknown. And that's what a big fear of these animals are.
So Manola, a couple last questions here. The giant garter snake, it's getting some statewide attention right now. Is that right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Michael is trying to get the snake to be California's state snake, partially because he thinks it would be a good way to get more people to be aware that it exists and that it needs some help. So that effort's coming in the form of a bill that's been making its way through state legislature this year. And that bill, last I checked, has made it pretty far. So I think it's likely that we might have this snake be our state snake by the end of the year.
Wow. That would be really something to have mm-hmm. a California snake. Very good. Okay, so last thing, can you give our audience just a taste of what you're working on in the future?
Yeah, so, you know, I'm always looking for more animals to cover for this series. So if people want to reach out, you can find my email. You know, if you scroll to the bottom of my stories, you can find an option to email me. Feel free to give a suggestion. As long as it's native to our area, I'm happy to look into it. Yeah, and then aside from that, I'm always working on other animal-related stories. I finished one, I think it was maybe a couple months ago now, about the reintroduction of wolves to California and what that's looked like. So that was more looking at human-wolf conflicts. And then coming up in the future, I'm working on one that's looking at rats in Sacramento. So not really native to Sacramento, but kind of looking at how they impact the way we live and also what people are doing in response to living in a city that's usually actually ranked pretty high for its rattiness. It's actually called the rattiness list or something like that when I was looking at this ranking. So yeah, looking into that. But like I said, always happy to hear what people are curious to know more about.
Well, it sounds like you're going to stay really busy, and mm-hmm. this is an awesome series. So thank you, Manola, for sharing your reporting.
Yeah, glad to do it.
Manola Sakaita is Cap Radio's environment reporter. We've been talking about her recent reporting as part of the ongoing Rewilding Sacramento series, exploring some of the region's native wildlife. Still ahead, perhaps the giant ratchetfish at the Golden Bear has caught your attention, or maybe it was the flaming horse in Fremont Park. New public art inspired by the creativity of Burning Man has been popping up in Midtown Sacramento recently. We'll learn more about the Urban Dreams art experience. You're listening to Insight here on Cap Radio. I'm your host, Chris Nichols. We're back in just a moment.